Welcome to our podcast series, Talking with Traders, hosted by expert trader Garth McKenzie in London, from where he's interviewing various guests on the topic of trading.
Welcome to Season 2 of the Talking with Traders podcast series with me, Garth McKenzie. In this season, I'll be interviewing various successful traders and investors in my network and asking them pertinent questions about their career in the financial markets. I'll also be discussing how they've dealt with the recent surge in market volatility following the outbreak of the COVID-19 pandemic and how they are viewing the future as we all adjust to a new way of working. We'll also be talking about market themes that are likely to gain traction in a post-COVID-19 world. Joining me for this week's podcast on the Talking with Traders series is Siam Kidd. He's the founder of TheRealisticTrader.com. He wrote a book called The 15 Grand Pop-Tart. I'm sure we'll talk about that during the interview. He's been a presenter all over the world, a keynote speaker at various trading events. He was the star presenter at the US Money Show Las Vegas event. And I first met Siam in 2017 in South Africa when we shared the stage at an IG Markets trading symposium. So it's great to catch up with you again, Siam. Welcome to Talking with Traders.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's good to chat with you again, Garth.
Yes, it certainly is. Siam, let's get straight into it. You are an active trader. You're the founder of realistictrader.com. You follow very sound trading principles. And I remember when you and I met the first time, I felt like I'd sort of met my twin brother almost, in the sense that I think we follow a very similar philosophy around the market. We try to portray it in a realistic light. We try not to dress it up to be more glamorous than what it is, and to put trading in a, you know, in a responsible fashion. Where did you get started in trading, and tell us a little bit about your background story?
Yeah, sure. So I guess I started like every punter, idiot punter does. And the reason I guess I'm really boring these days is because I've done all of this stupid, exciting stuff. So when I was 18, I joined the Air Force to become a pilot. And at the same time, I started to trade. And it was weird. It's like a seesaw. To begin with, my Air Force career was going great. My trading was going terribly. And I remember, the first 4 years of trading, I lost 100 grand. So I lost 50 grand in my first year, and then for the next 3 years, lost another 50 grand. And I guess roughly there or thereabouts. And I had my money management skills, full stop, were just atrocious. Because I was like flying planes, I was having a load of fun, and I had this weird system where my take-home income would be £2,200 per month. I would blow £2,000 a month on the markets and then blow £200 a month on partying and boozing up. It was just ridiculous. So all my mates had, and even my old flying boss back then, thought I had a gambling problem. And I always tried to cover it up. No, I don't. But really, I did. I was addicted to the 5 minute and 1 minute chart. I've always been a currency trader. So I was, you know, majors and minors. And I was dicking about on the 1 and 5 minute charts, just placing over leveraged trades, tiny, tiny stops, you know, all of the, you know, the stuff. I was trading on my mobile phone. I was trading on the move. I wasn't logging. I was literally making every mistake you could possibly make. And so, 4 years of hell. Well, I mean, it was fun. It was like a typical yo-yo up and downs, massive wins, massive losses. Like, for example, my first big win, I turned, oh God, I don't know, 10 grand into 10 grand into 80 grand or something like that. It was just a luck. I was massively over leveraging, massively. And I think I had three massive trades in a row. And then I blew 20 grand quickly. And that was around the Pop-Tart time. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Right.
And then I was left with 60. And then this is how bad at money I was. I went out and bought an Aston Martin. I was 23 years old, driving around base in a silly Aston, and completely destroyed my capital, my trading capital, because I just put it all in the car. So then I was left with I wait till next month and had another 2 grand trading account again, and I was let's try and run this up again and fail. So
Well, I guess at least you did buy the car. You know, I just lost all the money in my early years and never got the car to show for it. So, so I guess at least you had something to show for it at some point. But I mean, you tell a very common story there about the very difficult years of starting out as a trader. And likewise, my first 6 years were not good. They were a disaster. So it feels like it's almost a rite of passage. You know, so many of the traders that I've interviewed on this series have spoken about their early years being very, very difficult. And it is a bit like a rite of passage, I think, to get into the markets. Yeah. You've got to, you know, get some scars and learn the lessons the hard way, ultimately, before you start to learn how to do it responsibly. And that certainly seems to be what you do now, and certainly what you talk about a lot on your website, therealistictrader.com. So, I mean, nowadays, now that you've advanced and you've progressed and been through the hard yards, what is your primary investing or trading strategy nowadays?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've always been a trend trader, so I look at everything from a first principles point of view. And so when you look at any old market over a period of time, you'll find that most markets trend probably anywhere between 15 to 30% of the time, and the rest of the time it's ranging or choppy, etc. And so I actually started out when I was doing day trading, et cetera. I was fading freaking everything. You know, I'd be hunting for choppy ranging markets and I'd fade everything. And that's good. But then I guess from my research and from my point of view, at least, the only real trading strategy or investment strategy that has worked over multiple centuries is trend trading. Like when a market trends, it tends to trend longer than you think. And that's where you can get some really good R multiples. So everything like good old Dr. Van Tharp, I learned R multiples from his book years and years ago. And so I'm always looking for massive like R multiples. So and the way I do it is I guess I'm constantly taking little nitpicks at the market using, you know, entering with very low risk trades. So all I'm looking for are low risk, high probability outcome trades. That's it. Mm. And what I want to do is try and latch onto a trend. And so I'm constantly, you know, nitpicking, trying to get in. And then when I get in and, you know, and the market starts trending, that's when it's game time because I then scale in. So, for example, if we go back to, I guess, probably the best trading day I've ever had, it was, I think it was 24th of August, 2015, Black Monday. Mm-hmm. So I was shorting everything pretty much. Well, I was massively long on pound Kiwi because that was going nuts. That spiked crazily. But if we take, I think, the Dow or the S&P 500, that just collapsed. I think it didn't drop too much on a point basis. I think I've got my charts here. I'm just going to have a quick look. I'm just going to quickly go back to the, sorry.
No, no problem.
Scaling it. I just want to get the numbers up. I have the worst memory, you see. Here we go. Yeah. So when look at the Dow, only dropped about 2,300 points over a couple of days. But over that period of time, I probably banked about 25,000 points.
Wow!
Even though the market only dropped, just over 2,000 points, because I scale in, so I ended up having dozens and dozens of trades. And in fact, on my website, if you go to my about page, I put the generated report, the broker generated report up there. You can see how there'll be a whole bunch of pound Kiwi trades, indices, etc. And so, yeah, when I latch onto a trend, I'll just trail the stop up, and then look for re-entries. And so, yeah.
And when you start out to trade, because obviously, you know, yes, you're a trend trader, but you don't know that the trend is going to trend until it's trending, right? So I suppose you've got to, you know, you've got to kiss a lot of frogs before you find the prince. And in that respect, obviously, this is a probabilities game. every trade that you do essentially is a probability outcome. You're taking a bit of risk to find out whether your analysis or your thoughts are correct or not. What percentage of capital do you allow yourself to risk in the beginning of a trade when you set out?
0.25% max risk.
So a quarter of a percent. Yeah. So that's very, very small. But then obviously you're looking for those multiple R trades. And just for the listeners to this podcast who don't know what an R is, what we're referring to there is the risk. So if your R is 0.25% of your capital, let's just say for argument's sake you had £100,000 in an account, 0.25% of that would be £250. But then of course the key in this business is to try and ensure that you maximize your risk to reward ratio on your winning trades. So you would want winners that are multiple times that R number. So you're looking for trades that are, you know, I always go for trades that are 3 or 4 times the risk I take on. But of course, we all want those big ones, the 10R, where you make 10 times more than what you risk. I mean, in terms of some of your best trades as a risk to reward ratio, have you got those stats handy?
Yeah, they tend to all the good ones tend to be over 15 to 20 R. So because when you get into a trend early, and it then really starts to trend. Like if I'm getting in on with something like a 50 pip stop, and then it goes 500 odd pips. I mean it's a really good. That's a 10 R outcome.
Absolutely.
But then obviously in that 500. Well, mind you, not 500 pips. When I say a good trend, I'm looking for the 1,000 pippers. And pretty much every pair will do a 1,000 pip trend at least once a year, minimum once a year.
Yeah.
And so I'm not trying to get the top, not trying to get the bottom, because by default, if you are trend trading, you will probably miss the first 10-20% of the move. Because the trend is your friend until the bend at the end, the bend at the end will take out a couple of your trades.
Yeah.
So you'll miss out the first 10-20% of the trend, and then the last 10-20% of the trend is actually going to do damage. Mm. But if you get that meaty chunk, you'll be able to put a bucket load of trades in that meaty middle bit, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're
trailing your stops. Yeah.
Yeah. In the sense of running your profits, because as you said, you're looking for those 15 to 20 R trades. And the key with that is to run your profits as long as you possibly can and to capture as much of that trend as you can. What sort of technical filter or what rules do you have to keep you in a trade so that you are able to run a profit for as long as that?
Yeah, it's really simple. So I've used the 8 and 21 EMA for about 10 years now. I find it funny how there's lots of YouTube pretenders, starting to use the 21 EMA and all that. And through me, I mean, I've never been taught trading. I've always taught things myself and through trial and error. And I've just always rested on the 8 and 21. And whenever you look at a trending market and just plop those EMAs on, you'll find that when it trends, it hugs the 8 EMA. And every now and again, it'll punch through the 8, but the 21 EMA, I call it, is bigger brother. It will slap the market back down or back up or whatever. Mm. And so you can just trail your stop using, just keep it above the 21 EMA. And I also keep an eye on those 00 levels as well.
The big round numbers.
Yeah, the big round, yeah.
And just another question on that respect, because, I mean, we're talking about those two exponential moving averages that you've referenced. But now you're talking currencies, obviously, because we're talking about pips and whatnot. What sort of time frames charts are you looking at then?
For those, typically the 4-hour or the daily.
Okay, so a daily. Okay, so it's as long as that, because I was almost under the impression that these were intraday charts that you were referring to.
No. You'll never get a 1,000 pip trade playing with like a 1-hour chart.
Yeah, it'll throw you out too often. Okay, yeah. So actually it's quite broad analysis that you're looking at. You're looking at daily charts with an 8 EMA and a 21 EMA as
And also the 4-hour.
And also a 4-hour. Okay, very interesting. All right, fantastic. Yeah. Now, we've spoken about the best trade, the one that you mentioned, Black Monday. Now we've got to keep it balanced, Siam. So what about worst trades?
endless. So it's interesting. So when you look at if you're to do trading properly, you should never have that was a really good win or that was a really bad loss, because everything is just R multiples. You should never lose more than 1 R ever. So you should never get in the position where you're like, oh, I'm just going to move my stop loss down a bit more and end up with, you know, bombing out minus 2R. So everything's always minus 1R or 3R plus, etc. So, but all my big losers really have been in the earlier years. So the earliest one. So remember when I said I ran like 10 grand to 80 and then quickly lost 20 grand?
Yes.
Because I was like, oh, at this rate, I'm going to be a millionaire in 2 weeks' time. So I was going all in. Like every trade, I was literally going all in as much as the margin would allow me. And so there's once I was at home, must have been on a holiday because I was still flying at this point. And I was day trading, or I was actually scalping. And I placed this trade, and I, back then, the scalping technique I had didn't have a stop loss. and I was a bit peckish, so I wanted to go downstairs and put some Pop-Tarts in the toaster. Came back like a few minutes later, and I was like, and this trade was going against me. It was like minus 9 grand, minus 10 grand, 11, 12, 13, 14. And literally, by the time I exited that trade, I was, yeah, just over 15 grand loss, which wiped my account. I think it was like I had a 22 grand account or something, and then boom, 15 grand loss. So, yeah, I made loads of mistakes from that one.
And hence the name of your book that you authored, The 15 Grand Pop-Tart. Yeah. And yeah, I remember getting a copy of that when you and I met in South Africa at that IG Markets Trader Symposium, and I've still got the book, and I enjoyed reading it. In fact, anyone listening to the podcast should try and get their hands on it. It's because it's a very short, it's a thin book. It won't take long to read, but the lessons in there are really thorough, and it's, you know, distills trading down into some of its most important components. So it's a good book to read as if you're wanting like a quick weekend read, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but so that I guess was a bad trade. I mean, oh God, I've done so many bad trades; it's ridiculous. I guess actually these days here's something which I think is a bit different. I haven't seen anyone else that's done this other than me and my students. But on a big picture, I effectively run two accounts these days. So I have what I call my DIY pension account. And that is an account where the bulk of your money is in and no silliness touches that at all. So I have very strict risk management parameters within that, and I never deviate. So my discipline level is 100%. And that's something else that's another stat which you should also measure, your discipline rate. I mean, I met a fund manager once who was running sort of eight, nine figures. And I was like, what's your discipline level? You know, and he wasn't familiar with it. I was like, well, how many trades do you place which are not within your parameter, as in your trading plan? And he was like, oh, I'm probably, you know, 95% accurate. I was like, Jesus. I was like, So that means 5% of the time, this money manager is literally firing from the hips using gut feeling. And like, would you want your pension fund manager, you know, firing from the hip? No, you wouldn't. You'd want 100% discipline rating. Anyway, so I've got my DIY account. Nothing silly happens there. However, psychologically, I'm not the best person to be a trader because I've got a gambling streak in me. And so when I'm placing these 0.25% max risk trades and I see, and you know, and the setup may be juicy, I'm like, God damn it. I don't want, you know, this is going to go better. So I then have a gambling account. I call it, it's got a couple of names, crash account, gambling account, go large account, whatever you want. It's a gambling account at the end of the day. So I'll then place that identical trade on my gambling account and I'll go all in. I'll literally risk like 20% max risk on that trade.
Okay.
But here's the thing, because I know my stats, because I know my hit rate, my stats, my expectancy, that's all you really need to know, your expectancy, I actually make more money from my gambling account than I do my DIY pension account. Because what I do is I'll put 5-10 grand in it and I'll blow up that account probably 3, maybe 4 times a year. So at least, yeah, probably once a quarter, I will actually blow up my account, as in my gambling account.
Right.
But once every 18 months on average, I will 10x or more that account.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
It does make sense. And then at some point, do you sweep that account and shift some of it across to your DIY pension account?
Yes, I do. Or these days, if I do run up that account, I will actually go out and buy a toy. Just like you said earlier, like in the early days, I went for years without having anything to show for it. So, you know, if I run a 10 grand up to 100 grand, I'll probably, you know, go on a nice 5-10 grand holiday and then put 90 grand back into investments, whether it be in my businesses, or crypto some back in the DIY pension account.
Yeah. Okay. You spoke there about your businesses, and before we started the recording, you were talking to me briefly about this and saying that, you know, trading is not the only thing that you do. And that's something I've found quite common amongst a lot of professional traders, is that actually trading is not their only interest, that they also do have a variety of other business interests. And I include myself with that. I don't just trade. I have various other business interests that I'm involved with. And I think it's psychologically that helps, because, you know, you want to have a little bit of a diversified revenue stream. But also, I just think that psychologically, if you know that your ability to pay the bills at the end of the month or the end of the year is entirely dependent on your ability to trade the market profitably, well, then that places an inordinate amount of pressure on you, and psychologically that is a killer. So you mentioned that you've got other business interests, and that trading is not all you do. Can you just tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So you're spot on. So I mean, bear in mind, it took me 6 years to get profitable, and I quit my job, as in I quit my Air Force job, way too early. And I was in a bad situation around sort of 2010, 2011, because I was jobless. I couldn't get a job. Literally, I was unemployable. Even Sainsbury's, Tesco and Asda turned me down for shelf stacking jobs. It was ridiculous. Like, why is this Air Force pilot trying to get a shelf stacking job? It's, you know, no one would hire me. And I was relying on my day trading to pay my rent and utilities. And it was, the amount of stress and pressure that puts you under is just remarkable. And I, guess what? I blew my account and I was literally pennies away from going bust, like bankrupt, etc. Mm-hmm. I had to get a 10 grand loan from my dad. And that was probably the lowest point in my life. Like, yeah, because the bank wouldn't loan me anything. And yeah, so, I mean, he made a great ROI from that loan, by the way. but... yeah, and so actually one of the things that turned my trading around, which is really weird, was when I got into business, and once, you know, my income stream came from my business back then, my trading just suddenly improved, because I wasn't stripping the account. I wasn't trying to take, you know, because if you're trading for a living, like full-time, you know, and that's your only income, you are literally stripping your account every month to pay for stuff.
Yeah.
And it's, and yeah, so I prefer to have an account and leave money in it and just watch it accumulate and compound. That's really when trading gets good, when you have a lot of money in your account. And then, I mean, you can get, like, I guess going back into the earlier days, you know, there was a point where I was a good trader. I was consistent. I knew my shit. I knew my stuff. But, you know, when you're trading a 10 grand account, even if you make a great year and you're making 20%, 30% or whatever, well, whoop-de-doo, Basil. I mean, that's like 2 grand, 3 grand profit.
Yeah.
I mean, it like...
just doesn't move the needle.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt. And that's where a lot of people go wrong. I mean, some people, after hell, 2 years, maybe 3 years of trading, you know, they're pretty good traders. But because of that, you know, the pitiful amount of actual real profit, you know, couple of grand profit, that then leads them into getting those horns of greed out. And that's when they blow their account.
Yeah.
So... yeah, going back to the sort of the business question. So, yeah, I started getting into business. I quickly realized that every billionaire on the planet pretty much got their riches via business. I was like, ah, okay. Well, there must be something there then. Pretty much every millionaire, centimillionaire I knew back then, I managed to, eventually I knew quite a few rich people. They're all business owners, every one of them. Mm. So... I was like, oh shit, I got to get into business. So then I started doing that, failed massively, because I knew that the starting averages were like, you know, in your first, if you've never run a business before, you have a 9 out of 10 chance of blowing it, you know, not passing year one. So I was like, screw this. It's like trading, R multiples, screw it. Okay. That one business that will win needs to be more than 10R.
Gotcha.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I did it. And so I think it was lucky business number 4. And then 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, like all the others were fine. So since 2015, I've been big into mergers and acquisitions. So I buy businesses, or I went to, the plan was to buy and sell businesses, but all I've done is buy businesses. I haven't really sold many. Okay. So I'm just a bit of a hoarder of businesses at the moment, which isn't good because it takes too much bandwidth, mental bandwidth.
You're listening to Talking with Traders, a podcast series brought to you by IG, a world-leading online trading and investment provider. If you haven't checked out the IG online trading platform, please do so and visit IG.com. Also, make sure you subscribe to the podcast series on your favorite podcast app or website by clicking on the subscribe button, and you'll be notified weekly as we release new episodes.
So what I do is all the profits from my businesses, I then siphon off into my trading / investing, and that's all I do.
Okay. Now, part of your business is, as we said, the realistictrader.com, and you run a 12-month trading program on that. And yeah. That's where you get students, you vet the students, you won't just accept anybody in, as far as I can tell. And you run a program teaching people how to trade and how to approach the market in a responsible fashion, and ultimately to become consistent and successful as traders. And in leading up to that question, and before we started the recording, you mentioned that we want to talk about your trading bot as well, which I presume is tied into the 12-month trading program. Can you tell us a bit about your trading bot?
Yeah, it's interesting, because in my 15-grand popped-up book, one of the things I said to massively avoid are trading bots. One, because for the last 10 years, I've never got one working properly. And what I've now realized is that the missing jigsaw piece, which actually turns a good or enables you to have a good bot, is machine learning. Now, machine learning has only really become widely accessible over the last couple of years. And so, we now have a machine learning trading bot. And so that was pretty cool. But the thing that was frustrating me is that in the early days of, I guess, teaching people how to trade, I would teach everyone identically. You know, they're all watching the same videos, they're all watching the same, you know, live sessions, etc. Yet I could not understand why everyone was getting wildly different results. We'd have some students that are absolutely nailing it. And those students, you know, they've been with us for 7-odd years now. They're some of, you know, they're the mentors in the group. And then on the far end of the scale, we have some people that are just atrocious now. And I was like, how the hell, as you know, a teacher, can I get rid of that variance? Because that's high variance. And I mean, I've now come to the conclusion, you know, looking at all of our stats, etc., is that, I mean, you could have the world's best trading system and you could teach it to 100 people and they would still all get different results, no matter how stringent the rules were. And the thing is, it's the human element. Humans are just stupid. We are all stupid in a sliding scale. and so one of my goals is just to be less stupider than I was yesterday. I'm constantly learning. I have an insatiable thirst for learning, and I just want to do better thinking, make less mistakes than I did yesterday, etc. So, but not everyone else is like that. And if you're not disciplined, you will fall into those traps that I put in my book. Like, you know, you will get into day trading, but the wrong way. You will, you know, over leverage, over trade, all of the, you know, the basics. So that's why you get different things. So this is why I've really pursued this machine learning bot, because what we can now do is that everyone from day one, we do a Zoom call, you know, you get hooked up on your bot on a live account straight away. So that way your money is working for you. You know, you're not missing out on trades, because a lot of people are like, oh God, Sim, I don't want to do this. You know, all of these videos, because there's a lot of videos, there's like 60 plus hours worth of training videos.
Right.
Which is like, this isn't like a quick course. And I don't want anyone that's in it just, you know, for a quick buck. But what we had a lot of people saying, oh God, I don't want to wait a year before I can start trading live money, or 6 months or whatever. Because typically what I used to say was, you know, trade on a dummy account until you're consistently profitable. And on average, that'll take, I don't know, 6 months, let's say. But then people are, you know, they're chomping at the bit. So now people can start trading real live markets with their own money in their own account. I don't take anyone's money straight away. And it takes the pressure off so they can learn in slow time.
Okay. Yeah. So interesting.
Yeah.
And what you've spoken about here is, you know, a lot of learning and constantly wanting to see the next big thing. Now, obviously, we're living in a very fast-changing world now, particularly with COVID-19. It's rapidly changing the way we all work, and it's introduced a whole lot of additional volatility into the markets most recently. In that context, are there any particular themes that you are focusing on looking out into the future, perhaps themes that weren't there pre-COVID that are there now?
Yeah, God, that's a big question. I could talk for an hour just on that question. So I think a lot of people are thinking, and I think I'm incorrectly thinking, that eventually, you know, a cure is going to come out, a vaccine or whatever, and everything will go back to normal. That's not going to happen. This is the new paradigm shift. We are in the new paradigm shift right now, where everything is dispersing and will remain dispersed. We'll see, you know, over the years, let's say, I mean, right now, everyone is, loads of businesses all over the world have realized that they don't need massive fancy office buildings. They can still run their business leaner with less staff, or working remotely, or, you know, a portion of them working remotely, etc. And as a result, we're seeing massive, you know, insolvencies, and bailouts. I mean, we got Intu going bust. We have, like, there's so many big businesses going bust right now, or going to chapter. becoming insolvent, etc. So I think this is the new paradigm shift. And when you're looking at macro metrics, so I mean, everyone seems to think that the stock market and property prices equals a healthy economy, like rising stock prices. Like, it's not. Actually, rising house prices is detrimental to GDP. But when you're looking at the real health metrics of, like, this is going to be not an L-shaped recovery, it's going to be like a lightning bolt down. Like, we're looking at 1929 depression sort of stuff. So, especially if you look at the velocity of, you know, US M2, or the, you know, the US money supply or currency supply, it's plummeting. The only reason that they're having to do huge amounts of stimulus is because the velocity is jumping down. But going back to your question, what does this mean for the future? So I think we are in for the biggest depression we will see for centuries. That's just my opinion. So I'm bracing myself for an absolute shitstorm. What does that mean for businesses? It means loads of businesses are going to go bust. And we're seeing them already. Like, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. The Federal Reserve is buying up corporate debt right now. That's how crazy it is. Mm. Like, and I made a video on my YouTube channel, and there's like 70 companies all getting debt from the getting capital from directly from the Fed. And we're talking Microsoft. We're talking, you know, Caterpillar, the Hyatt, Marriott Hotels, God, there's loads. Check that video out, it's just insane. So I've actually stopped my M&A stuff. I'm not buying any businesses yet. It seems like, you know, it's a fire sale, but I think it's going to get a lot worse. And I personally don't know where the dust is going to settle. I don't know, like, if it is as bad as I think it will be, I don't know what businesses will thrive in the new future, if that makes sense. I mean, the population has already been conditioned to go to, you know, be willingly going into lockdown the moment the WHO says, hey, somebody else is here, I know coronavirus 2 is out or whatever. Lockdown, and everyone go into lockdown again. So if you're, so what I definitely don't want to buy or get into is any form of business which will be affected by lockdown, if that makes sense.
Right.
So travel, all that, the travel screwed permanently. Yeah, so that's that. But also, when you're looking at this from an economics point of view, like, the Fed or the central banks and the governments will continue to pump. That's the only thing they can do, pretty much. I mean, I don't want to bore you. The time is limited today. But they will pump and pump and pump until they can't pump. Mm. Or where, you know, velocity money, it just won't touch the sides. So in an inflationary environment, so when we're talking, at the moment we're talking about monetary inflation, where they're expanding the currency supply, eventually that will trickle down and we will see real inflation, as in price inflation.
Yeah.
And so when we enter a price inflationary world, or hell, even a monetary inflationary world where we are in right now, you absolutely 100% need to buy assets which are non-inflationary or deflationary in terms of their supply. Okay?
Right.
So it's a shame we don't have video. So imagine on your left hand, if you imagine in your left hand has the currency supply, and that's growing and growing and growing and growing, okay? And now on your right hand, you now have a bunch of assets. It could be widget. Let's just call it a widget. Now, if the supply of that widget is limited or is growing slowly in comparison to your left hand currency supply, that is what you need to go into. And so when you scour the world assets for non-inflationary or deflationary assets, in brackets, when you're looking at the currency supply, all my needles and pointers and whatever just keep coming back to bullion and crypto. So gold, for example, the supply of gold grows roughly 1.8% per year, in line with human population growth. But what's the currency supply doing? We all know it's exponential. Debt is exponential. So when you have a limited supply, gold and silver are going to go to the moon. They have to. And again, when you're looking at a higher level, it's highly likely that, you know, China or the IMF will back they could back the SDR with a small proportion of gold. Or if China backs, you know, their monetary supply by, you know, even 10% gold, then, you know, we're seeing gold in high five figures. And then if you look at the gold to silver ratio, then you'll realize that gold is massively overvalued compared to silver. So it's like, oh, screw this, don't buy gold, just buy silver. And then swap into gold later when that ratio comes back down. Mm. So that's the bullion element. And then you look at the crypto element, which when I look at the the risk to reward ratio, or just R multiple of stuff, I've never in my life, and by the way, I'm a student of money and the history of money, I've never seen an asset which has such a high R multiple. We're talking 1,000 R plus, easy.
You're talking specifically just cryptos in general now?
Yeah, let's just for shits and giggles, let's just say Bitcoin, okay? I'm not going to be dicking around with any ICOs or anything like that.
Yeah.
Let's just say Bitcoin for all intents and purposes when I say crypto. So we all know, like, there will only ever be 21 million Bitcoin. The last Bitcoin will be mined in the year 2140. And so when you look at the distribution of the supply, like 90% of all Bitcoin are out there right now, okay? Mm. So it's plateauing in terms of supply. Now, when you look at all the hodlers, etc. So there's been roughly 4 to 5 million Bitcoin that have been lost. That's irrecoverable. I've personally lost about 20 Bitcoin when I first got in, not knowing what I was doing, sending it to the wrong address, blah, blah, blah. And then you have all the whales, all the big boys. I mean, Satoshi Nakamoto, whoever him, she, they organization are, they've got 1 million Bitcoin just locked up from the beginning. And then you have all of the miners and the whales, as in the big multi-billionaire holders. So when you're looking at realistic circulating supply, you're looking at something like 10 to 12 million Bitcoin out there.
Right.
So that's the supply, 10 to 12 million Bitcoin. So now look at the currency supply. Like, you know, if you look at it's exponentially growing. In terms of stimulus, they've created more stimulus in the last 4 months than they did between 2008 and 2012 already.
Yeah, it's unbelievable how aggressively the Fed has been expanding their balance sheet over this time.
Right. Yeah, and obviously the financial sector is obviously just gobbling and absorbing all of that up. Some of that may trickle down into property, and then eventually some will trickle into other stuff. But for me, just looking at it from a market point of view, cryptos is what, a $0.3 trillion market cap. Gold is roughly a $9 trillion market cap. The global stock market is an $80 trillion market cap, and the global bond market is a $100 billion market cap. Well, actually now, post-COVID, is going to be a lot more. All it takes is another tumble. So I believe that the March lows will be taken out. I mean, that's another topic, but I see a massive stock market crash coming imminently. And when that happens, all it takes is for a couple of trillion dollars just to spill off from, you know, the 180, call it $200 trillion bond and stock market. All it needs is just a couple of trillion dollars just to enter into crypto or Bitcoin. And that will spark Bitcoin like crazily. I mean, put it this way. I grew publicly, and I broadcasted every move in 2017. I grew a $25,000 crypto account to $1.1 million in 4 months. And that's when the crypto market cap went from $400 billion to $800 billion. So I had like a 4,000% return, which, I mean, I didn't get out at that. I got out a bit late for my liking. So I got out of Bitcoin around 11.5 grand. So $11,500 Bitcoin. So a bit late. Going back to this, so like if you take all of the elite's wealth, so when you look at every billionaire, millionaire, and or anyone that has over sort of £1 million net worth, you're looking at something like $260 trillion worth of wealth. Now, most people wouldn't bat an eyelid to put 1% of their liquid net worth into something, okay? Mm. Like, even if you're earning, you know, £1,000 a month and you got 100 quid spare at the end of the month, like, what's 1% of that? It's 1 quid, right? No one would bat an eyelid of putting £1 into something. So just imagine all the millionaires, or, you know, $260 trillion, 1% of that flowing into crypto is going to send, you know, Bitcoin well beyond 50 grand a Bitcoin. So, yeah. So I've gone off on one for cryptos there. But yeah, going back to your original question, which is, where do you see stuff happening now? For me, it's, I'm sitting tight in businesses. I'm going to buy a whole bunch of businesses in a couple of years when shit really has hit the fan and there's metaphorical blood in the streets, or hell, probably even real blood in the streets. Yeah. And meanwhile, I'm loading up on, well, I've already got my gold and silver, or mainly silver, but now I'm going to be accumulating ether primarily.
Okay. Very good. We're getting towards the end of our allotted time, so I've got just one or two more questions for you, Sam. Right. if a newbie comes to you, and obviously this happens because you run trading courses and you run education, so a lot of new start-out traders come to you. What piece of advice, if you had to give them two or three bits of important advice as a start-out trader, what would you talk to them about?
Oh, man. First of all, are you financially stable? As in, do you have a regular, reliable income stream? If you don't even think about trading. Like, don't. You need to sort yourself out first. Like, I've taught probably over 10,000 people now, and I can see the patterns, and I know that everyone in the early days who joined me, and I didn't know, but in hindsight, I now know that they were financially unstable. They were my worst students, by far. They were gamblers. They were, you know, it's just, as we mentioned earlier, there's so much stress. So you need to, you know, enter this with, you know, a stable base. What you don't want to do is borrow money to get into trading. You also need to be realistic. You're not going to double your money in your first year of manual live trading. You know, hell, if you break even, I'm really happy for you. Because there's a lot of things you've got to learn. People seem to think they can do like a really quick online video course or whatever, or buy a strategy from TradingView or whatever, and make money. That's as gullible and naive as thinking you can pick up a drill and become a dentist pretty, you know, in a week. like it's not going to happen. Like, there's so many people I speak to who have no understanding of basic, in my opinion, basics like expectancy. What's expectancy? What's variance? What's your hit rate? I mean, everyone's obsessed with hit rate. I don't give a shit about hit rate. Like, my trend, by default, trend trading, you will have a low hit rate. Typically, I'm 35 to 40% accurate with my trend trading.
Wow. Okay, so 35 to 40% accurate means that you're wrong on 60 to 70% of your trades.
Yeah, I'd probably say more like 35%, yeah.
Yeah, but of course you're making so much more on the winning trades than what you lose on all of those losers, and net-net you come out really positive at the end of it.
I think off the top of my head, if you're maintaining a minimum of 3R with your trend trading, you can be wrong 23% of the time and break even.
Hmm.
Was it 25%?
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. That's what a lot of people don't realize about this business, is that, you know, keep the losses small, let the winners take care of themselves. And if you do that properly, the winners really will take care of you.
Yeah.
Just one more question before we wrap it up then, Sian. Are you a big reader at all of books and trading books? And do you have any, you know, two books that you can recommend to listeners of this
podcast? Yeah, when it comes to trading, actually, no. I haven't read a trading book in years. However, my favorite trading books, by definitely get Trade Your Way to Financial Freedom by Van Tharp.
Van Tharp.
That's such a cheesy book name, but it's literally the best thing I've ever read when it comes to trading. And in that book, it talks about R multiples. That's where I read it. So whenever he launched that, I read it around then.
Yes.
I think. So that's one. The Trading Turtles are good.
Yes.
Is it the Mark Curtis one?
Yep.
And then all of Jack Schrager's Market Wizards.
Yes, so, love those books.
And then, I don't read them, I listen to all of them.
Yes, likewise. I'm also big into audiobooks nowadays. You can kill two birds with one stone if you do an audiobook. And then, of course, the 15 grand Pop-Tart, your book
100%.
Must have to be on the list, right?
Yeah, and that's free. You can get that for free.
Yeah.
Regarding your other question in terms of advice, as you know, as a trader, there is a war amongst us between fundamental traders and technical traders. You've probably seen this.
Of course.
And everyone's, oh no, fundamental's way forward, technical's way forward. Please, if you're new to this, don't get sucked up in that stupid war, honestly, because there is no right or wrong. I would say every form of trading works. I'm not a fan of news trading at all, but it works if you know how to do it, if you have a fast news feed, blah, blah, blah. But the thing is, also have context. So time frames is important. So what you absolutely must not do is read the news and go and, you know, look at some big macro fundamental thing and go, oh my God, this is really bullish. Let's go long. And then place a trade on, you know, your 5-minute chart or hell, on a daily chart, because fundamental stuff takes time to play out, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is why I think if you're trading, you should really start off being a technical trader, because, you know, trying to understand all the fundamental stuff as a beginner is just, it's futile. Have a mechanical system and stick to it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree more. Trade what you see is one of the things I really believe in, and look at the charts, look at the technicals, and trade what you see. And you're quite right that you try and marry a long-term fundamental view to a short-term technical, a short-term trading view just doesn't work in my experience
either. You're investing.
Yeah, no, quite right. Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to end it there. We've run out of time now, Siam. It's gone very quickly, but I've really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you so much for giving me about 45 minutes of your time today. It's fantastic to catch up again. And I hope we can catch up again now that I'm in the UK again sometime soon.
Yes, definitely.
Right.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. Sorry if I spoke too much.
That's what I called you for. So thank you very much for your time.
Cool.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode of Talking with Traders, brought to you by IG, a world-leading CFD provider. We really are privileged to have such a leader in the field of online trading involved in this series. Please follow us on Facebook and engage with us there. And a reminder to make sure you subscribe to the series by clicking the subscribe button on your favorite app. Till next time.